welcome to Coastless, the podcast for those navigating a connection-based travel lifestyle. I'm Boyce Richardson.
And I'm Melissa Yeager. This week on the pod, we're welcoming Jeff Stryker from Edgemoor to tell us more about the planning and construction about to take place at MCI. But first, we thought we would dream a little bit and talk about some of our favorite things when we've gone to other airports and what we'd like to see in the new airport. Boyce, what's your favorite airport to go through?
You know, I really, really love Portland's airport. It was one of, I think, generally the first of its new kind from a regional perspective, where you start to look at places like Indianapolis and Raleigh-Durham that have beautiful airports for sort of more regional areas, a little bit below places like Charlotte. But, I mean, to the surprise of absolutely no one who listens to this podcast, one of the primary amenities or airport aspects that I enjoy the most is the ability to get a good local beer. Yeah. When I am waiting on my plane or perhaps delayed. And I think one of the things that you started to see in a lot of the new terminals, and one of the things that I really hope to see in the new terminal at Kansas City International, is sort of a tour of the city from the perspective of our breweries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you get that a lot, especially in Portland. You know, people will talk about, I think there's a movie theater there. I might be wrong. I think that's a little bit weird. I don't ever want to sit in the dark after getting off of a plane or after getting out of a city. But what I really do like to do, especially because I do a lot of traveling alone, is just take some time at a bar, have a good local pub ale, and kind of just sit there and take in either the last vestiges of the city that I'll get to experience or kind of an initial sort of grace period or meeting period. What about you?
Well, first of all, to segue off of that, the Munich airport and the Berlin airport, the one, the Schönefeld, which is their kind of a reliever airport, both have beer gardens in them, which is amazing because you're like, you can have your pretzel and your beer and you definitely feel like you're in a German airport at that point. My favorite, I do like the Munich airport. I still love Southwest Florida Regional Airport. It used to be super convenient. I don't know what's going on right now. They've had some really lengthy lines with security as of late, which is a little troubling. But it used to be so easy to get in and out of when I lived down there. And in terms of ones with odd amenities, the Singapore airport, I think, has a pool on the roof that you can go swim. The Singapore airport is ridiculous, though. It has like all sorts of crazy amenities. Do you have any common amenities you look for in an airport that make the time there a little bit easier?
Oh, you know, having been a Chase Sapphire Reserve card holder, one of my favorite amenities is a Priority Pass lounge, just because I can't tell you how much money that saved when traveling with Quinn or traveling with my family, where you can kind of drag people and give them a chance to get away from everything and just relax for a little bit. And there's free drinks and there's free food, and you just get to kind of come to and go into a bathroom where there's not 30 people. I think that's just an amenity that's associated with that credit card that I've come to value an extreme amount, especially in international travel. I was going to say, I only cover domestic airports. I absolutely love Narita Airport outside of Tokyo. If there's one airport that kind of embodies the vibe and soul of a city, it's Narita. It is easy to navigate, lovely angles, great Japanese food. Just a really easy airport to use.
I agree with you on the Priority Pass. I sometimes get to the airport quite a bit earlier now because it's like my luxury thing of travel, that I'll go and sit in the lounge and have a meal for free and relax a little bit. I'm through security. I can calm down for a bit, use the Wi-Fi. And it is weird that Kansas City doesn't have a Priority Pass lounge, or any lounge for that matter, really, right? Like,
there's not. And I think what's really interesting is if one gets built, whether or not that actually changes some user habits related to the airport in Kansas City. You know, if Delta were to build one or United were to build one, does that change people's allegiance to get the credit card or to, you know, get the frequent flyer miles and actually associate with that airline, just because it really is a wonderful saver when you're tired or you're delayed and you're looking for a place to just relax for a little bit. And it's definitely one of the benefits. Maybe we'll do an episode on credit cards one day that I happen to love about the Chase Sapphire Reserve the most.
Yeah, we're Chase Sapphire homers here. Like, we both have links. If you want to, am I allowed to do that? Like, I don't know.
Do an entire episode where it's you and I talking about that as the only credit card that we plan to use.
Yeah, no, I mean that the other ones have been circled out of rotation now. Like, there's just so many good amenities with that credit card that I enjoy it. But yeah, it's super sad. There's no Priority Lounge at Kansas City.
What is your least favorite airport terminal in the United States or perhaps in the world?
Oh, LaGuardia. Oh man. I would say, and I don't think it's necessarily because of amenities. It's just like, I feel like security's a nightmare. Like, you have the New York attitude. You know, when you, LaGuardia is not my favorite. And Kansas City, sorry, it's just, I don't understand the love affair with it. I think because I've been on the flip side. I mean, I guess I get, you go through security fast, but then you feel kind of claustrophobic on the other side to me. So,
well, it's like going through security to get through to nothing. There's just not, it's like entering the gates of Oz, except Oz is a barren wasteland when you get in. And it's just filled with disappointment. But I will say on my end, I actually, and this might upset other Midwesterners, I do not like Denver's airport. I do not like it at all. It is the unending hallway of hell where it
I've
is
heard
like,
other people say that too.
It's like 100 gates long. And I think I have a really terrible association because we got back from Iceland and we were trying to catch our flight back to Kansas City on United, like all these bags hanging on to them for dear life, running through this airport terminal only to be confronted by none other than TV's Phil Sims at the gate to tell us that the flight had been canceled.
No.
Mad dash through the Denver airport, celebrity sighting, and then terrible news.
That is a pretty terrible thing. Have you ever used like the little sleeping pods in an airport? That's like the new thing that's going to come into Phoenix. And I'm curious if like Kansas City would have something similar where you can, if your flight's delayed or whatever, you could pay for a place to take a nap or something.
I have not, although I would assume it's kind of like the pill hotels in Japan, which were a really interesting experience that I would unquestionably recommend to anyone that's going over to Southeast Asia. I'd probably use them if I got stuck somewhere. I don't know if I'd use them at KCI just for the fact that I could just get in an Uber and go home. But maybe if I was feeling really bitter and didn't want to leave, I think it's an interesting option. I mean, there's just it's certainly better than sprawling across multiple uncomfortable chairs, using your luggage as a pillow and hoping for the best.
I recently did a story about the Amazon Go things that are looking to go into airports. What's your opinion on having a person help you or being able to like check out by a self checkout?
I always like self checkout. I'm not gonna lie. It's funny. I enjoy interactions with people under certain specific circumstances, but if I can avoid talking to anybody when making a purchase, I would gladly have that be the reality. So if I can just roll in, grab my bag of Gardettos, self-scan it out, throw my credit card in and leave, that's 100% exactly what I would want. What about you?
Same. I like that autonomy. And apparently that's what the research shows, is that our generation and the generation after us, that's what we want. So I think airports will be changing. Last question for you. What do you want to see in the new airport? What's your...
Oh, I want to see some barbecue, I want to see some beer, and I want to see some jazz. I want to see amenities and aesthetics that actually remind me of the city that I love and remind me why I choose to live here. And hopefully, in the same way that they would remind me of that, they would sort of create memories in other people as to what they loved about the city when they came to visit and maybe think them about coming to live here themselves.
Yeah, same. Not to borrow from Marie Kondo, but I want it to spark joy. Like when you come in, you're like, yes, I'm in Kansas City. And these are all the things I love about this place. And barbecue, smelling barbecue and some Boulevard beer and the other breweries that are in town, and hearing jazz just sounds like joy. On that note, we're going to welcome Jeff Stryker right after this.
This week on the pod, we are joined by Jeff Stryker, the managing director of Edgemoor Infrastructure and Real Estate, who specializes in the development of high-profile transportation projects. Jeff, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much. Excited to be on.
All right, Jeff, for those of our listeners who are not aware, in September 2017, Edgemoor was awarded the bid to build a new terminal at Kansas City International Airport. Can you talk a little bit about how Edgemoor became involved in the bidding process for the new terminal and what aspects of Edgemoor's bid you believe swayed the airport committee?
Sure. So we had been tracking the new terminal project for about a year prior to any proposal coming out. We responded to the RFP when it was issued in the summer of 2017. We're fortunate to have been awarded the job, as you said, in September. I think a couple of things swayed the bid in our direction. The first was we put forward an idea that said, we don't know exactly what you want because you haven't given us an opportunity to talk to you. So we didn't put forward any renderings, any design. We said, we wanted to sit with you. We want to talk with you. You're our client. We want to get input from the community and therefore then design an airport that meets the needs of Kansas City based on the feedback we get from the aviation department, from the community at large. And I think that resonated the fact that we said, we want to work with you and roll up our sleeves. I think another aspect of what we put forward was from a financing perspective, we gave a couple of alternatives. One, exactly what the city had asked for in terms of financing, which included both debt and equity to finance the project. But we gave an alternative with 100% tax-exempt debt that would save the city millions of dollars per year. And I think they like that creativity and flexibility that we put forward.
How does something like that work for people who don't understand finance?
Sure. So the simple way to think about it is the airport can finance this project with an interest rate of about 4%. If we had gone out and used taxable debt, it probably would have cost 5%. And the equity that we would have provided to the project would have gotten a return of 10 or 15%. And so when you just do you think about the numbers, obviously 4% is lower than 5 or 10 to 15. And therefore, the cost to pay back the debt over 30 or 35 years will be lower to the airports and the airlines. And the good news is that translates to lower costs for the airlines as they operate, which should mean lower fares to travelers in Kansas City.
For people who don't know Edgemoor, can you tell us a little bit about the company and perhaps, you know, some of the projects people might recognize so they can have an idea of what you guys do?
Sure. So Edgemoor was founded in 2001. We've been around about 18 years now, and we focus only on public-private partnerships. And in that space, we've done work in transportation. We've done some road projects in Northern Virginia. We did a very large project close to Kansas City at the University of Kansas, called the Central District Development Project, where we delivered 7 different buildings across 55 acres on the KU campus over 2 years, where we designed them, we built them, we financed them, and now we operate and maintain those buildings. We've done a couple of projects out in California, a neuroscience building for the University of California, a civic center project for the city of Long Beach, as well as a courthouse in Long Beach for the government. So all we focus on is delivering public infrastructure for our clients all across the country.
Excellent. And so to get back to the bidding process a little bit, I know afterwards there was still a lot of heated debate over it and perhaps a little bit of controversy from some sides. Can you give us some perspective about how the bidding process works and what you guys were required to provide during, you know, the RFP? You know, I don't think a lot of people don't know what goes into that process.
Sure. So the RFP itself, I'll split that into two pieces. The RFP itself was, I would say, a fairly typical RFP. It asked for information about our team members, Edgemoor's developer, our construction partners, our design partners, and our experience in aviation, both designing and building airports. It asked our approach, our schedule, our budget, how we would finance the project. All those elements are pretty typical in an RFP response. You're right, Melissa, that after we were awarded the job, there was ongoing issues with some of the prior bidders and wanting to try and get back into the project. And so it was a long road, but ultimately we were able to prevail and provide a great value to Kansas City through our proposal and were awarded the job.
Jeff, just because I love saying it, in November 2017, the citizens of Kansas City voted 75% to 25% in favor of the construction of the new terminal. How are you feeling before the vote?
You know, it was when we first awarded the job back in September, I think the ratio was about 40% positive, 60% negative. We worked very hard with a lot of stakeholders in Kansas City, the KC, Greater KC Chamber, the KCADC, the Civic Council, the mayor, members of the city council to explain the why of the airport, the benefits from an economic development, from a jobs creation perspective, from what it would, could mean for attracting world-class events like the World Cup and major conventions to the city. And I think that process over 6 or 8 weeks really swung the vote for voters fully understanding why this was a needed and critical infrastructure project that led up to the 75-25 vote in November.
In the end, did the margin of victory surprise you?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit higher than I thought. We had been tracking polls that were coming out, and they were swung from that 40% up to above 50 and into the upper 50s. So we felt good heading towards the election night, but 75% was obviously an overwhelming mandate from the citizens of wanting this project.
And if you can tell us without impacting our parental advisory rating on iTunes, how did you celebrate after the results were released?
You know, I was at a watch party like many other people down. And then, you know, we went back to the hotel we were staying at that evening, had a glass of champagne and, you know, went to bed and rolled up our sleeves and got to work the next day.
And speaking of that, so after the initial award, then the vote, the next task you guys had to take on was negotiating terms related to the development agreement. And one of the primary points of that discussion during those negotiations was involved the inclusion of women and minority-owned businesses in the Kansas City area. Wondering if you can talk a little bit about that process and where you guys stand with that now.
Sure. So we had made a significant commitment in our proposal to minority and women-owned business. We recognized that that would be a critical element to the project and to success. And so we committed to 20% of minority business participation, both for construction and professional services, as well as 15% participation for women businesses, both, again, in construction and professional services. I think that was critical to gaining support of council members in the community to recognize that we really wanted to make sure that this project had what we think of as a legacy impact in Kansas City. And so we've made that commitment. In fact, we have one of the contracts that we have with the city is called the Developer's Pledge. And in that, we've committed to those numbers, those goals to reach 20 and 15 respectively for minority and women-owned business. And we were even willing to put a portion of our fee that we would earn at risk if we missed those goals. So we wanted to demonstrate to the community and to city council that we were extremely serious about those numbers. To date, we are tracking a little bit ahead of schedule on the women-owned business side, both in construction and professional services. Contracts to date is right at 15%. On the professional services and the construction side, we're between 20 and 22%. So right now, we're exactly where we want to be.
And what areas of construction process will those businesses be involved in to give people an idea and put, you know, a physical idea to,
sure,
to put the idea, make it more concrete?
So from a construction perspective, we are trying to make sure that we get 20% minority, 15% women across all construction scopes. So whether that is the structure that gets built, whether that is the parking garage, whether that is the mechanical systems, the electrical systems, the glasswork, all the concrete that gets poured, every element of the project, we are looking to get the 20 and 15. We may find in certain areas that we get 30 or 40%, and in other areas we only get 15, but ultimately we are trying to find capacity opportunities for minority and women-owned businesses in every single scope of the job.
And so what are some of the other larger local Kansas City contractors involved in the project that people might recognize?
Sure. So we hired J.E. Dunn in a design-build basis to build the parking garage for the project. That's a very large, over 6,000-space parking garage right across the street from the main terminal. So they are one of the major Kansas City contractors on board. We have Capital Electric as the electrical contractor. They are the lead. They're with Mark One, a women-owned business in Kansas City, doing the electrical work. On the mechanical side, we have U.S. Engineering leading the mechanical side. So those are a couple of the big names. On the construction side, there is still lots and lots of opportunities. Most of the work has not been bid out yet and will be bid out throughout 2019 and into the early part of 2020. So there's lots of opportunities for firms to still join the team.
Whenever a list of the best terminals in the United States is released, it always seems to feature Indianapolis, Portland, Tampa, and Phoenix. What are some of the aspects of those terminals you believe create such overwhelmingly positive user experiences? And how have or will those features factor into the final design of the new terminal at Kansas City International Airport?
So great question. One of the things that we did after we were awarded was do what we would call sort of a best practices analysis. And we went out with the aviation department and visited a lot of terminals that are comparable size, so mid-size airports, to see how they worked, what the aesthetics were like, what the operations were like, to try and glean lessons learned. And so we visited Indianapolis. We visited Dallas Love Field, which was really the model that the programming had been based on. And so some of the things that we've taken away from our project is, you know, how to size what's called the hold rooms, where you sit waiting for your airplane, wanting to make the amenities what I would call uniquely Kansas City. So if you're a Kansas City resident, when you walk through this terminal, you're going to know it's Kansas City. If you're a visitor for the first time to this airport, you're going to know you're in Kansas City when you land there. We have spent a lot of time looking at baggage handling systems. That's one of the most critical elements of a terminal, is making sure bags get from, if you're on your way out, from when you check them in onto the plane to the airport you're going to, and then you pick them up at baggage claim, or the reverse if you're flying back in. The other thing that we spent a lot of time on was the aesthetics, wanting to make sure that we had a unique design that reflected the best of Kansas City. And so I think you'll see some elements of Indianapolis, you'll see some elements of Dallas Love Field, but at the end of the day, we want to make this a unique airport that is Kansas City and Kansas City specific.
After the vote in November 2017, Edgemoor began a series of community meetings to receive feedback about the potential new terminal. Although I have no doubt the convenience featured heavily, what were some of the other common concerns?
Sure. So convenience was something we heard loud and clear when we went. We actually did two series of community outreach meetings. One, as you said, Boyce, right after the vote in November and December, and then a second last summer. So convenience was something that we heard from a lot of folks. Amenities was something we heard, better access to retail and restaurants. We heard a lot about technology, making sure there was lots of opportunities for, you know, Wi-Fi and charging stations. We heard a lot about the restrooms and making sure that we have more quantity of restrooms, higher quality restrooms. That was critical to the citizens. And then one of the things that really benefited was hearing items from the community that perhaps either the original program didn't have or that we didn't contemplate originally. And the best example of that is a USO. The original program did not have a USO in it. But as we went and talked to the citizens of Kansas City, we recognized how important the military community was to this region. And so we've added a USO into the design.
Above and beyond the USO office, did the community outreach meetings actually change any other aspect of the design?
That was the most critical. We heard a lot about wanting business lounges. We heard a lot about maintaining convenience. And we heard a lot about wanting to make sure that this was not a cookie-cutter airport, as I said, and that it really reflected Kansas City. And so as we've moved forward in the design, we've wanted to make sure that it has unique aesthetics and one that when someone goes through the building, they'll know they're in Kansas City. So, for example, one of the things we've had in the design is the idea that there are these two sort of retail food court nodes where you could get food, there'll be tables and seating. And so we added a stage so that you could have jazz bands playing throughout the day to reflect the heritage of jazz in Kansas City. And we think that'll be a unique element to the project.
So in the 50 years since the construction of the original terminal, there have been a lot of changes in the standards for accessibility. And I'm wondering what steps you guys have taken to consider that in the design and ways that you hope that accessibility will really set Kansas City apart.
Yeah, great question. So we're really focused on trying to make this, if not the most accessible airport in the country, perhaps the world. So here's a couple of things that we've added into the design. At the departures level from the curb, when you would get in to go anywhere through security, out to your gate, it's all at one elevation, meaning there'll be no ramps throughout the entire building. It'll just be flat. And we think that'll be a nice benefit. We've got moving walkways to help folks get throughout the terminal. So that's another feature. We've also focused on wanting to make the airport environment as welcoming as possible for all families. And so we have things like we will have adult changing rooms for restrooms for families that may have, adult members who needs, a special place for changing. We have partnered with Variety KC to put an accessible playground within the airport so that children of any needs would have an opportunity to play before they got on a flight. So those are just a few of the examples of how we're trying to make this an extremely accessible airport for all travelers.
It seems like each passing day, we're inching closer and closer to a society less focused on parking and more focused on ride sharing and public transportation. And despite Clay Chastain's best efforts, light rail in Kansas City is still a bit of a pipe dream. How will the design of the new terminal factor in current and long-term trends in transit? And also, how will the design seek to maintain sustainability as parking becomes less of a requirement?
So transportation is something that we've spent a lot of time focused on. So a couple of things that we've done. First and foremost, we have in the parking garage at the lowest level created an environment where you'll have rideshare companies be able to have access that's much closer than they are today, as well as taxis. It will also have special locations for buses so that whether it's KCATA or Greyhound, they'll have opportunities to take transit out there. We have thought of if light rail ever came out to the airport, how would that occur? And so we've reserved some property close to the parking garage such that if a light rail ever came out there, there would be a space to put a terminal. The other thing we focused on is today, as you know, the rental car facility is you have to get on a shuttle bus. But in the future, if the parking demands just of folks driving to the airport was reduced, designing the garage in a way that the rental car facility could move to that garage that's right next to the terminal to make it even more convenient.
And so when are you guys hoping that you'll have a final design or final renderings released?
So we are just kicking off what's called schematic design in the design world and the construction world. Generally, designs are broken into three phases: schematic design, design development, and construction documents. And we are doing this as what's referred to as a design build project, meaning rather than design everything to 100% and then start construction, we will design the building in pieces. So we will get all the foundations done and then we can start foundation work. We will get the structure done and we can start structure work. So we anticipate having all the design completed within the next 12 months. And so you'll see advancements of renderings coming out as we finish schematic design, which is about 4 months from now, design development, which is about 8 or 9 months from now, and then the final drawings in the beginning of 2020.
You hit on it earlier about what some of the things people were concerned about, the issue of bathrooms behind security. And we heard Justin Meyer say he is fighting, he would die on the hill for bathroom doors that swing outward instead of inward. I'm wondering what you guys are envisioning in terms of bathrooms behind security.
Yeah, so we are envisioning doors that swing out instead of in. We recognize lots of travelers will bring their suitcases into the restrooms. So we want to make sure it's convenient. We also plan to have things like hooks either on the door or inside the stall so that men can hang their briefcases, women can hang their purses if they bring all their baggage into a stall. We also have this idea of what we're calling a paired restroom, meaning when you'd walk in, there will be stalls to both the left and the right, such that when the cleaning crew could come in, they could only close half the restroom, let's say the left side, keep the right side open, such that the access to the facilities will always be available. So something we've spent a lot of time on, because we know that's one of the most important elements to travelers, is not having to wait in line and having clean, convenient, and accessible restrooms.
When do you envision the deconstruction of Terminal A will be complete?
So the demolition should start in about 3 or 4 weeks, and then it takes about 4 months. So about the August-September timeframe, all of Terminal A will be gone. The parking garage will be gone, and we will begin to be putting piles into the ground, which is the foundation for the building. And then into the fall, you'll start seeing the structure being erected.
And once construction is complete, what has to happen before flights can actually begin to arrive and depart from the new terminal?
So when we get to the tail end of construction, we have to go through a process called commissioning, where we work with all the systems providers. So those that put in the mechanical systems, the electrical systems, the baggage handling systems, for example, and commission them, which means that we test them to make sure that they work as they were designed and as they're programmed to do. Once that is done, we will work with the aviation department to move the airlines from either terminal B or C, depending on where they operate today, over to the new terminal, and then the flights will start in the new terminal.
Other cities around the country have begun to use their airport terminals as a kind of living lab where new technologies are implemented and tested to improve the overall experience. Do you know whether there are any ongoing discussions about that possibility at the new terminal here?
So one of the things that we're looking at is sustainability. We have a LEED Gold target within our contract, which is a very high sustainable element. So we are looking at ways to be more sustainable, whether that's through electricity, whether that is through renewable energy, whether that is through how, when we build it, recycling materials. So those are some opportunities for us to try and drive sustainability to its highest possible levels. We, as we move forward, we will continue to look at opportunities to make this, as sustainable a project as possible.
And so, Jeff, I have one final question for you. What's perhaps the feature of the new terminal design that you're most excited about or looking forward to?
There's a lot of elements that I'm excited about. I think the stage I talked about with the opportunity for jazz musicians is pretty exciting. I think we've talked about having public art throughout the building that will recognize the history of Kansas City, whether that's looking at the 18th and Vine District, whether that's Negro League baseball, whether that's the history of the property itself, which has a long and rich history to it. Bringing those elements out. We all know that Kansas City is known as the city of fountains. We plan to have a fountain within the terminal as well as one outside the terminal. So I think that fountain element really brings home the you're in Kansas City. So those are a couple of the items I'm excited about.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. Edgemore can be found on social media at KCI Edgemore, as well as at Build KCI, the account dedicated to the construction of the new terminal. Also, don't forget to follow Coastless on social media at Coastless KC. Safe travels.